Rambam reminds us that a Tanis is supposed to be Yom Tshuva. It's a day for introspection and a day to look in the mirror and ask ourselves how we can grow and what we need to change. And we just said a couple of moments ago in the Slichas for Asara B'Teves, he highlighted in particular, Shem Acherim Hizkira V'Avon Goreim, Pnei Elo Hikira V'Shutfa V'Zarim. One of the chataim that we think about in particular on Asara B'Teves, in terms of our tshuva, is the extent to which we're intertwined with Avodah Zarah. And the extent to which Avodah Zarah is on our lips, and the extent to which that gets in the way of our recognition of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Today also, Lahavdil, is December 25th. And certainly a day as a thoughtful Eved Hashem to think about the differences between our Emunah, our Masorah, and Lahavdil surrounding religions. So there are some obvious differences between the Jewish Masorah and Lahavdil Christianity. We said also a couple of minutes ago in the Avinu Malkeinu, he said that we spoke of the Harugim Hashem Kachecha, the Tevucham Yichudecha, the Ba'eva Eshu V'mayim L'kidush Shemecha. Jews have given their lives to maintain belief in Yichud Hashem. And that's a reference, among others, clearly to the tens if not hundreds of millions whose lives were taken by the church over the last two millennia. But Baruch Hashem, we live in a Malchus Shel Chesed, as Rav Moshe Feinstein famously termed the United States. We live in a gracious country with extraordinary religious freedom. And Baruch Hashem, Harugim Hashem Kachecha, Tevucham Yichudecha, Baruch Hashem is not part of our consciousness. The other obvious difference between our Emunah, our Masorah, and Christianity, of course, is that we believe Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. We believe in monotheism, whereas Christians believe in the pantheon of the Trinity, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as well as worshiping a human being. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as well as be Mishatev Chalila with an Avodah Zarah. But those are the obvious differences, the historical difference, sorry, the obvious difference in terms of belief. I want to take a look at something more subtle, and therefore, in a sense, something more important. I think it's something that's worth our becoming more aware of. Now, I want to start the conversation with a Gemara that's very much tied to Inyana Diyoma, so to speak, to December 25th, and not only because it's one of the times that the Gemara references the Magi, or a Magus. Take a look at the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Gemara Sanhedrin that was highlighted by the Maharal, highlighted by the Vilna Gaon, highlighted by the Ramchal. Let's take a look. Gemara, it's in the midst of a conversation. Sanhedrin Lama Tess is a series of conversations that various Tanam and Amoraim had, theological conversations with members of other religions. So I want to highlight one short episode in particular. Amalei hahu amgusha le'amemer. There was an amgusha, a magus. Magi is a plural of magus. Magus were the priests of the Zoroastrian religion. That was at the time the state religion in Babel in Persia. And this had been a dominant religion in that area, in Paras Umadai for many, many, many centuries at least. So this magus, this amgusha, says the Amora Amema, Mipalgahu li'ilai dehurmiz, Mipalgahu tatai dehurmin. This is written in Tam's Girsa in the Gemara, that from your diaphragm and up is the area, the domain of hurmiz, and from your diaphragm and below is the domain of hurmin. In other words, this is an expression of those Zoroastrian belief that in dualism, there are two gods. There's the god of light and the god of darkness, the god of good and the god of evil. There's Hurmiz, Ahura Mazda, and there's Hormin, Ahriman. There's the god of good and the god of evil. That's their Avodah Zarah. That was their Epicursus. So this Amgusha, this Magus, says to Amemar, he says, Rabbi, you have to understand what I believe is that a human being is split. From your diaphragm and up, the heart, the lungs, the head, the ears, the eyes, that's the part of the person that has to do with light and spirituality, and that's the domain of the good God, of Hormuz. And from the diaphragm below, the part that's focused on the physical, the digestive system and the reproductive system, that's the domain of Hormin, of the god of darkness. So the different girsos in exactly what Maimar responds. So the girs of the Vilna Gaon, which is not recorded on the page, but it's recorded in his Perish Al Kama Hagados, he says, well, how could that be? Hechi shafikle la'avure michli umishti. Then how does he, if there's a war, if there are two gods, and the top half of a person is the domain of the good god, the bottom half of the person is the domain of the god of evil, so, and the god of the physical, so then how do you cross the border? How could it be that the digestive system is down below in the netherworld, but the upper area allows, the food comes in through the mouth, and the esophagus takes it through the upper half. So how could that be? How could that be? And the Maral explains that the meaningfulness of this Gemara is Tshuva Zos Al HaAdam. A Maimar has explained, look at a person, Ein Lo Mar Shemisha Nasan HaDavar HaZeh Dehainu HaNefesh Lo Nasan HaGuf. The real argument is human beings are a radical fusion of two elements. Human beings are a radical fusion of a neshama and a guf, of a soul and a body, of a ruchni and gashmi. And the Zoroastrian looks at people and says, clearly, you know, there's spiritual and there's physical. And there's a God that's focused on the spiritual and there's a God that's focused on the physical. And people have two halves that don't really work together. We're a paradox. Part of us is spiritual and part of us is physical. Part of us worships the God of light and part of us is focused on the base God of darkness. He says it's not true. You look at the way human beings are designed, the two halves are intertwined. Ein lo, my Maral explains, ki chelek zeh shayich lezeh, v'chelek sheni shayich l'acher. No. Achar shematzanu, ki yikaneis achelek l'acher b'sheni. They're intertwined. It's a single whole system. A human being is a single whole system. And a Maimer is saying to this magus, this member of the magi, this representative of Zoroastrianism, he says, you believe in dualism, you believe in two gods, but you're right, look at the human being, Adrabba, look at the human being, the physical and the spiritual are intertwined. And we accept, instead, we reject the Zoroastrian view, and we accept instead, we say in Kriya Shema, every day Hashem Echad, and the Pasuk in Yeshayahu, with which we open the Birkas Kriya Shema, Yotzer Orav Ori Choshech, it's a paraphrase in the Birkas Kriya Shema, Osa Shalom Vori Ra, Ani Hashem Osa Kol Eile, Yeshayahu reminds us. There's a single God who creates good and evil, creates light and darkness. It's all from the Ribbono Shel. So this, if you will, is the rift of the Magi. That the Zoroastrianism and the Magi sought to introduce a rift, a split. That half the world is good and half the world is evil, and there are two powers. And we absolutely reject that. Every morning we open chakras by rejecting that. So you might say, okay, it's interesting. Historically, once upon a time, Zoroastrianism was a significant religion. For centuries, if not millennia, it was a very significant religion in Persia. Okay, but machpat lanu. What does that have to do? Why are we so concerned today with digging into ancient history? The truth is, it's not just ancient history. Yeah, question. A spot on kasha. Right? We do believe in the Yetzer Tov and Yetzer Hara. We do believe in Yetzer Tov and Yetzer Hara. So that segues us perfectly. Right. So Eric can make an excellent point. We absolutely do accept. Jews do not deny the fact that we have a physical element, that the human being has a physical element and a spiritual element. And Jews absolutely embrace the fact, the reality, that human beings are a radical fusion of spiritual and physical, of neshama and guf. As a matter of fact, we look around the cosmos and we see that we are the only such bria. There are spiritual brias and there are physical brias, but human beings are a bria that is both spiritual and physical. Absolutely. And we absolutely recognize and embrace the fact that we have a Yetzer Tov and a Yetzer Hara. But the difference is here. And so where is the difference? And where is the difference b'zman hazeh? The difference b'zman hazeh, and this is going to circle around to your point about Yetzer Tov and Yetzer Hara, is that this is one of the elements of Zoroastrianism, although Zoroastrianism is no longer a dominant religion, but it endured in Christianity. It very much endured in Christianity. Not only, as we mentioned before, Christianity obviously is not monotheistic, it believes in a Trinity, but more subtly, the Trinity, that's an obvious difference, but there's something more subtle, and I think it has more impact on our lives. You know, C.S. Lewis wrote what could have been a marvelous Musar Sefer. C.S. Lewis, one of his most famous writings, was a very entertaining read, the Screwtape Letters, which meant to be a Dvar Musar, meant to be a Sefer Musar, so to speak, crafted, and instead of putting people on the defensive by pointing out, hey, you do this and you do that, you do this wrong, you do that wrong, you have this weakness. So he crafted it, the literary craft, was to think about a conversation between Satan and his nephew. Satan is trying to train his nephew into his apprentice, into becoming the next Satan, becoming the next Yetzirah. If there's a whole correspondence between Satan and his nephew explaining, so here's how you get people, and here's people's weakness. And so there's nothing directed at the reader. You just get to watch this conversation, and there's a lot of comedy, there's a lot of humor. And with humor, C.S. Lewis points out a tremendous number of human weaknesses. It would have been a remarkable Sefer Musar, were it not for the fact that it's riddled with the following Christian apikorsis. It's riddled constantly with the assumption throughout the work that that Satan is the power in the basement in the netherworld, and he's a semi-autonomous power in the basement who's fighting against God. So God is up there. That's the Christian perspective presented by C.S. Lewis. So the God is up there, and he's the God of goodness, and then Satan is sort of this rebel down below who's working against God to pull people away. So that is exactly this Zoroastrian belief that the Gemara presents and rejects, the notion that that Satan is some this independent power that's working against Ribbono Shel Olam. And that notion is exactly that apikorsis, is that there's an independent Satan who's in a fight with Ribbono Shel Olam, is exactly rejected in the opening parak of Iyov. Opening parak of Iyov presents Iyov has a wonderful life. Over the course of Iyov, Iyov has a wonderful life, and then his all of the goodness of his life falls apart. He loses his family, loses his possessions, he loses his health. Everything falls apart, and most of the Sefer is a conversation, series of conversations he has with various friends, trying to make sense of why do bad things happen to good people. Tzadik v'ra'lo. In the opening parak, where you begin by seeing the beauty of Eov's life, and then slowly all the pieces fall apart, the Sefer Eov gives us a sense of what's going on, so to speak, backstage. Because Sefer Eov describes that Satan comes from Ribbono Shel Olam, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells the Satan, you can go, here's what you can do. You can go and you can afflict Eov in the following way, but you can't do this, but you can do that. It's clear that the Yetzer Hara, that the Satan is not an independent power fighting against Ribbono Shel Olam. The Satan is one of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's malachim. We believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the universe. He created various forces through which he is mashgiach on the world. He created a system, which we refer to as malachim, through which he manages the universe which he created. And some of those tools, one of those tools is the Satan. So sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu will put good things into our lives. Sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu will put painful things into our lives. Sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give us things which are easy, and sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give us things which are challenges. So the tool which HaKadosh Baruch Hu uses to give us challenges, and the tool which HaKadosh Baruch Hu uses to sometimes inject painful things into our lives, we call that tool the Yetzer Hara. We call that tool the Satan. But that's a tool of the Satan, the Yetzer Hara, is a tool of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, much as any other malach is a tool of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Not Chalila, an independent power. But then you might still say, okay, So this isn't, this Gemara and Sanhedrin, it's not just ancient history. So this, this notion, this kfira, this apikursus of dualism has endured beyond Zoroastrianism into Christianity. You might still say, Asma, how does this impact me? Why should this matter to me? So the answer is, on two levels. So number one, it should matter to us because Ikari Emuna are a basic part of our religion. And the most basic mitzvahs are to know what we believe, and to believe in Rabbi Shalom, and Leida Sheisham Borei, and Liachado, to have a clarity about our belief in Hashem Achad. In the Rambam, I think I've shared with some of you in the past, Rambam writes at the end of the Pirush HaMishnayos HaMasechas Brachos. Pirush HaMishnayos, Rambam tends to be very, very terse. A couple of lines per Mishnah, tends to be very, very brief. But in the last paragraph of Brachos, there's one Mishnah where he takes a very, very, very lengthy digression to talk about Yonei Hashkafa and Yonei Emuna, working off of a comment that the Mishnah has in the last paragraph of Brachos. And then Rambam writes at the end, says, I apologize for being a little uncharacteristic. I apologize for writing at such great length. But, Rambam says, I never want to give it, if the opportunity presents itself to teach Emunah, I'm never going to turn down that type of opportunity. I have such a strong desire to teach Emunah that he'll never give up an opportunity to give those sorts of lessons. So that's number one. It's important for us to understand what we believe. But there's a second element, which is that this matters to us also because it's not only a question of theoretical Emunah, but I think that if we explore this idea a little bit more, our rejection of dualism, our rejection of the Hormiz-Hormin split, our rejection of the notion that Satan is an independent power, Rahman Hatzlan, if we explore this a little more, we'll see that it's not only a question of theoretical emunah, what we believe in conceptually, but it's one of the most practical elements in terms of practical hashkafa and practical machshava. I think this is one of the most central elements. And let me show you why. I want to take a peek at the Rambam's third chapter of Hilchos Deos. And I think in exploring this, you begin to see the lamasa, the everyday lamasa of this element of Emunah. The Rambam's Hilchos Deos, he looks at different aspects of human conduct. The end of Hilchos Deos, he has several prakim on the mitzvah shebe'am al-chavero, how we treat other people. The middle of Hilchos Deos, he looks at conduct in the sense of health and hygiene, and in the sense of the dignity of a Talmud Chacham. And the beginning of Hilchos Deos, the first two prakim, he looks at conduct in the sense of Tikkun HaMidos. The first two prakim, which do not appear in the Maamar Kamos in front of you, the first two prakim of the Rambam's Hilchos Deos, he looks at Tikkun HaMidos. He develops his central chiddush there is that having good midos is not just a good idea, it's not just a nice thing, it's one of the Targum Mitzvot HaTorah. That the halachta bedracha based on Chazal, but expanding on comments of Chazal, Ram understands that all the dimensions of Tikkun HaMidos, how a person handles money, and how a person handles frustration, how a person handles his ego, and so on and so forth, all of those are elements of the halachta bedracha. That we have a mitzvah d'oraisa that appears at least seven times over the course of Chumash Dvarim. We're meant to follow HaKadosh Baruch Hu's trail. The divine trail isn't a question whether they take a bridge or a tunnel. The divine trail is a question of seeking to emulate and seeking to model ourselves after the way the Tanakh describes HaKadosh Baruch Hu handling situations. So what is that? In a word, the Rambam says it's a balanced approach. It's a balanced approach. Sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu, certain things Rabbi Shalom will react about, and most things HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Erech HaPayim won't react about, and so on and so forth. So human beings are meant to try to emulate that divine model and also be balanced people. Balanced people. Some things you do react to, some things you don't react to, and you temper your reaction. You don't. Every situation is handled with deliberateness and with thought and with balanced midos. And there's certain midos that a person has to be very careful, certain extremes of midos that a person has to be very careful to avoid. And that's the topic of the first two Prakim Hilchos Deis. This mitzvah daraisa of Tikkun HaMitzvah, this mitzvah daraisa of a balanced character development, of balanced midos. And then the Rambam goes on to say in Paragimel, he seems to have two different topics. Paragimel is a very short parak, only three halachas, and he seems to have two unrelated topics. The first topic is don't take this to an extreme. And the second topic has to do with the finding HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the secular aspects of life. The first topic, he says, Shamayomra Adam, Paragimel Acha Aleph. A person is going to say, Kina, Taiva, Kavod, these are terrible things. These are terrible midos rose. Envy, lust, and ego trips. So I better go to the other extreme. A person might say, as many people have, Efrosh mehem yoser, Esrachekot sada achron. Let me go to the other extreme. Shal yachabaso, yishta yain lo, yisa isha, lo yisha bedira na, yibush malbushna. Maybe I should be an ascetic. I should be celibate. I should avoid tasty food. I should avoid a nice house. I should take a vow of poverty and wear a rope belt and live somewhere in a cave. The coyotes behind kigon kamari edom in the non-censored verse of the Rambam. He says like the Christian monks. Maybe I should be an ascetic. Maybe I should be a monk. Maybe I should be a hermit. Rambam says that's terrible. Gamza derech rahi, terrible. That's a chet. Chazal say it's inappropriate to become a nazir. Tzivu chacham l'shal yimei adam atzav v'dvar m'shemenatu ator b'levad. The Torah gave us plenty of yisurim, and the Torah's system is carefully calibrated. A topic that the Rambam picks up on some more in the Shemona Prakim, in the introduction to Pirkei Avos. The Torah gives plenty of yisurim, and they're carefully calibrated to get us to the right spot. So that's one topic. Don't be an ascetic. And then he seems to switch for the last two halachas, halachas Beis and Gimel, to a different topic, which is, what do I do with the mundane parts of life? Rambam says, look, and the halachas Beis and Gimel, according to Shulchan Aruch, or Chaim Siman Reish Laman Aleph, I believe, arguably the most frequent Siman and Shulchan Aruch. It comes up perhaps more than just about any other Siman and Shulchan Aruch, except maybe for Siman Hay. The Rambam comments that it tells us, you know, the first two parakim were about a mitzvah d'oraisa of halacha d'bedracha. Now I want to tell you about a mitzvah d'ivrei kabbalah, and a mitzvah that appears in a pasuk in Mishlei, and that is that, you know, some of our day is spent on overt mitzvahs, doing things which are actually maisei mitzvah. I'm learning, I'm davening, I'm giving staka, I'm shaking a lulav, overt mitzvahs. And unfortunately, some of our days are spent on avers. But then hopefully not too much of our days are spent on avers. The most likely, for most of us, and most days, a vast majority of the day is spent on neutral activities. Not overtly mitzvahs, but hopefully not avers either, neutral. Dvarim shalchun. So Rambam says it doesn't have to be that way. Without changing what I do, it doesn't have to be that way. The Rambam says, as a matter of fact, I have a chiyuv, yichavein libo v'chol ma'asav kulam, begim halacha beiz, leidas Hashem baruch hu b'vat, I have a requirement to focus my mind, to focus my heart, to focus my actions on yidiyas Hashem. Even when I'm doing secular things. He goes on to say, I can convert, some people's work is a mitzvah. I'm saving lives when I'm working, so that itself is a ma'aseh mitzvah, full stop. But let's say when I go to work, I'm not overtly doing mitzvahs. He says, still, I go to work, I'm seeking to make money. So that could either just be neutral, it could be negative, if I'm working in a dishonest way, so that's an avera. But let's say, no, I'm working honestly. The non-avera, he says, is it a mitzvah? He says, well, what actually, it depends. He says, Ram goes on to say, I sit down to eat. The food is treifs, okay? So that's an avera. I'm sitting down to eat on Shabbos. So asu the Shabbos a mitzvah. But I sit down to eat on a non-tanis. Sit down to have breakfast. So is that a mitzvah? Is that an avera? It doesn't seem like either. It's neutral. Because on say halacha gimel, a fellow adopts a healthy lifestyle. He decides, I hit age X, and now it's time to start exercising, now it's time to start rethinking what I eat. Or then he goes on to say at the very end, I go to sleep, I'm tired, end of a long day, I go to sleep. Not a mitzvah, not an aveira, just neutral. So Rambam says all these examples and more, it doesn't have to be neutral. What the key factor is my mind. He says, in all these cases, he says, if I go to work because I want to make money, because I want a nice house, because I want X, Y, and Z, that's not an aveira, it's not a mitzvah, it's neutral. I eat because I'm hungry, so I eat. Nothing wrong with that, nothing right with that. Neutral. I'm tired, so I go to sleep. Later. Neutral. I want to be healthy because that's what you're supposed to do, because everyone's losing weight. So I better lose some weight also. So, not bad, not good, neutral. The Rambam says, when Chazal tell me, you see, underlined at the end of Halacha Gimel, v'chol ma'asecha yu l'shem shamayim. Everything you do should be l'shem shamayim. Rambam says they weren't talking about mitzvahs. They're talking about kol ma'asecha. He says, imagine if there was an awareness, not only I'm hungry so I'll eat, but by eating I'm going to have the strength to do mitzvahs later. Not only I want to make money, so I'm going to go to work, but there's an awareness of what I'm doing with my money. I have a job so that I can afford X, Y, Z, so I can finance my avodas Hashem. Not just, you know, I gotta get healthier, period, but if there was a sense of purpose, a teleological sense, I want a healthier lifestyle so that the Derech HaTeva will have more years of more health on this planet to worship HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to raise children and grandchildren, to live a life of mitzvahs, b'ram l'chaver, b'ram l'makam, I'll adopt a healthier lifestyle to have more Arichus Yamin, and there's something I want to do with my Arichus Yamin. So then Rambam says, I just transformed all of those neutral activities into mitzvahs. I just transformed all of that. And Rambam says at the end, he said, even the greatest chiddush, sleeping. Presumably because it's the greatest chiddush because you can't, if you have kavana while you're sleeping, it's not much of a sleep. Now says, but a person goes to bed, and for a couple of moments before he goes to sleep, it's not just, I'm exhausted, I'll go to sleep. Nothing wrong with that. Nothing right with that. But if there was an awareness of, I'm going to sleep so that tomorrow I'll be alert during davening, so that tomorrow I'll be less irritated when I interact with family, with friends, with coworkers. So then I just transformed all those hours of sleep into mitzvahs. The mitzvah of, as he quotes, he says, Chazal say, v'chol ma'asech yu l'shem shamayim, end of Halacha Gimel, v'hu shamar shalom v'chach masav, v'chol d'rachecha da'ehu, to know HaKadosh Baruch Hu in all of your ways. Rambam says that means that there can be yedias Hashem, awareness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, injected into kol d'rachecha, all the parts of my life, not just the overt mitzvahs. If I eat in a sukkah, I shake a lulav, I give tzedakah, so that's a ma'asem, that's an overt ma'asem mitzvah. Even if I don't have kavana, it's probably still a ma'asem mitzvah. But the neutral parts of my life, kavana is dispositive. Kavana determines whether it's going to be a mitzvah or not. B'chol d'rachecha da'ehu. To have a sense of the purpose, have an awareness of the purpose, how the things I'm doing lead to Avos Hashem, enable Avos Hashem, it transforms these neutral activities themselves into Avos Hashem. So now take a look back. Take a look back at this path. So two interesting ideas, but at first they seem like they're sort of unrelated. One was, Judaism is anti-asceticism. We don't buy the idea of the ideal of a monkhood. We don't buy the ideal of celibacy. No, we're anti-asceticism. Balanced approach. Halacha Aleph. And then Halacha Beis and Gimel sounds like unrelated. The whole drachecha de'ehu, you can convert the neutral parts of your lives into mitzvahs through kavana l'shem shamayim. So what do these two halves of the parak have to do with each other? Does it have anything to do with each other? Or they're just, each one's pretty short. This one's only one halacha long. The other one's only two halachas long. So the Rambam one's going to make a separate parak out of each one. So he put them into one parak. Was there a connection? What do you say? Yeah?
Maybe this is the Rambam's way of the intertwining of it is the way to deal with those aspects.
Ah.
You know, the type of couple, to be intertwined. wine, you won't get into that problem.
Ah.
You don't have to worry about don't separate yourself from things to avoid. Don't avoid intertwining will actually decrease your flaws.
Ah. So Eric is pointing out that there's an interplay between these two halves. They're really two sides of the same coin. It's the Sur Mira and the Asay Tov. Rambam is saying, Lahalif, he says, there are other religions that preach that the ideal, the spiritual ideal, is to be non-physical. There are other religions that preach, like Christianity, as he references, that believe that if you really want to be spiritual, you cannot be physical. If you really want to be spiritual, the holiest person is the one who's most removed from this world. The holiest person is the priest who doesn't marry. The holiest person is the monk who seeks to minimize his physical pleasure in the extreme, seems to avoid any unnecessary benefit for Am Hazeh. It says, and we reject that. We reject the notion that physicality is, in other words, we reject the notion that physicality is fundamentally bad. Instead, that's a Sur Meira, a Say Tov. Instead, we see the physical as having spiritual potential. All the neutral activities, the eating and the sleeping and the working, and so on and so forth, Rambam says, it's neutral and it can go either way, and it depends on how you use it and how you channel it and how you focus it. In other words, the Rambam is really presenting is what we were talking about before, in a practical, lamasa sense. Kamare Edom, the Christians, who are the intellectual and spiritual heirs of the Amgushi, of the Magi, that Chazal spoke with, of the Zoroastrians that came before them, so they're presenting a notion, they're presenting a practical approach that we should reject all physicality. The Christians are presenting an approach that the way to spirituality is through being non-physical. That's based on their dualistic apikursis. If you believe, as the Amgush tried to convince Amemar, that there's a God of light and then there's a God of darkness, as C.S. Lewis presents the Christian version of that, that there's God in heaven and there's Satan in the basement and he's fighting against God. In other words, there's spirituality and there's physicality, and they belong to two different domains, and it's either or. Either you're going over to the good side or you're going over to the dark side. Which side are you on? So in that kfira, the output of that kfira is that all physical is inherently bad, that spiritual and physical are an either or. If you want to be spiritual, you got to be non-physical. Now we reject that extreme. Then that's what Rama writes in Perakim Alachal. You give me 1 second, and then I want to hear your heart. Perakim Alachal, Rama says, we reject that extreme. We reject the notion that spiritual and physical are mutually exclusive. But then it goes on to say, Alachabez, Alachagimel, we also reject the other extreme. And we also reject the secular hedonistic approach, that there is no spiritual and there's just physical, and just enjoy, do whatever you want to, because, you know, embrace the physical however you want, because there's no spiritual meaning to anything anyways. So Rambam says we reject both extremes. We reject the notion that's either spiritual or physical, and we reject the notion that spirituality doesn't play a role, so just do whatever you want. We take the higher middle approach that we believe in Hashem Echad, Yotzer Aru Barich Hoshech. Everything's from the Ribbono Shalom. What looks like light, what looks like darkness. That which is spiritual, that which is physical. And as the Maral points out in the Gemara, that's what Maimer is saying. My body, I am a human being, is a blend of spiritual and physical, and that's all from the Ribbono Shalom. Which means all of it has spiritual potential. It doesn't mean therefore do whatever you want, but it means the physical also can be a Chelek Ma'avos Hashem. If the physical is put at the service of the spiritual. If the guf is put at the service of the neshama, that's essentially what Rambam is saying. That my guf can become as much a part of my avos Hashem as my neshama, if there's a clarity of priorities, and if I'm seeking to further my neshama, if I seek to use my guf as a vehicle to further my neshama. And that's reflected, this notion that we reject both extremes here, that we reject the Christian Zoroastrian dualistic extreme, we also reject the hedonistic extreme, that's captured the whole system of halacha. The whole notion that there are halachas about eating, halachas about intimacy, and halachas about going to work, halachas about clothing, halachas about houses. Of course, that's what Moshe Rabbeinu says to the Malachim, the famous Gemara, famous Agadat HaMasech HaShabbos. Right, they say to him, the Torah belongs in Shamayim. And Rabbi Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, you answer them. He says, I'm scared. He says, no, I'll back you up, but you have to debate. And what does Moshe Rabbeinu say? Once he has the confidence to debate, he said, well, open up a chumash. Let's start with Aseres HaDibros. Shabbos, Kibud Av V'Em, Ritzicha, Niyuf, do any things apply to Malachim? You don't work, and you don't rest. And you don't have parents. And you don't have, you have no envy, you have no desire to take out a competitor. You have no, there's no fury, there's no taiva for murder. And it says you have no desire, you have no sexual desire. There's no taiva for niyuf. What we lo signo? Lo sachmo. Moshe Rabbeinu says to Malachim, the Torah belongs on this world. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a Torah to inject spirituality into the physical, to figure out how to do the physical right. Not the Christian extreme that we should just get rid of the physical, and that all physicality is inherently a obstacle to being spiritual, nor the notion that just do whatever you want and just lead an undisciplined life and be physical however you want to. No. The physical can be a part of our spiritual quest, which means we need to embrace it, and we need to embrace it right, with discipline, to avoid averus, sumei ra, but also to put it at the service of higher spiritual goals. And it's all of halacha reflects that. In particular, I would highlight a Yerushalmi, here at the very bottom of the Maran Makamos, a Yerushalmi that's quoted by Bais Yosef, and by the Darkei Moshe, at the beginning of Simen Kuf Kaf, the Simen about Tvilas Kelim. They reference a Yerushalmi, the very, very end of Avodah Zarah, the last couple of lines of Yerushalmi Avodah Zarah. The Amoraim say, Tzarech Lahakil, what's the idea of Tfilas Kelim? Tovlin Kelim. I buy pots and pans, forks and knives from the Nachri. So I take them to Mikvah. What am I taking them to Mikvah for? Are they Tame? Not Tame? And if they were Tame, if a Jew could have Kelim that he owns, which are Tame as well. Nothing wrong, unless I'm eating Truma or Karbanas, nothing wrong with having Tame Kelim. So what type of idea is this? So Yerushalmi seems to say, this is what later Sfarim point out, the Rav's terminology was that usually we think of tevila as a tevila ha-mitaharas, a tevila that removes tumah. But sometimes you have a tevila which doesn't do that. This isn't the only example. The tevila of a ger, what's a tevila of a ger? It's not removing the tumah. Min ha-Torah nachrim ha-never tameh. In the tumah of the tahara sense. What's the idea? The Kohen Gadol goes to mikvah five times Yom Kippur. What's he going to mikvah for? No one, if he was Tameh at the beginning of the day, he spent the last week making sure that he would be tar. And if he was Tameh at the beginning of the day, going to mikvah is not going to complete his tar until the next night. If he's Tameh, going to mikvah is not going to help. He's disqualified. We're going to find a replacement for today. And going to mikvah five times. Again, for what? What tumah is he removing? So Yerushalmi already addresses that. That sometimes you have a tefillah mitaharas, but there's another type of tefillah which is a tefillah mikadeshas. Sometimes the point of a tefillah is not to remove tumah as much as it is to inject kedusha. As Yerushalmi says. So for the ger we understand, to inject him the kedusha is a strong. For the kohen gadol we understand, enhancing his kedusha is gedolah lefnayim lefnim. But my pots and pans, my forks and knives, the Yerushalmi seems to say it's a gerus. Yatsumi Tumas Hanachi Vinikhansu Kedushas Israel. Kedushas Israel, the pots and pans. Now I have holy cutlery, sacred cutlery. What does that mean? So the answer is that exactly captures the notion that halacha gives me the opportunity, Rosh Hashanah gives us the opportunity to introduce Kedusha into the eating and drinking, to introduce Kedusha not into the Beis Medrash, to introduce Kedusha into the dining room as well. So I think they quote from the Kutzker. One of the very first times that the Torah discusses kashrus in Parshas Kedoshim, the introductory phrase is "Ve'anshei Kodesh Tihuni," you should be people of holiness. So the Katzker comments, it could have said Kedoshim to you, but the focus is Africa on Shed Kodesh. Now the Kodesh Baal doesn't want Malachim. He has Malachim. He wants it to be people of holiness. In other words, to find the Kedusha in the physical, as well. And this plays out, this is, I think, an important example of, and let me close with this. I think oftentimes, they open by saying, you know, there are obvious differences between our Emunah and Masorah as opposed to Lahavdil other surrounding religions, but that we would focus on something more subtle and therefore more important for us to focus on. Because I think this is an example, this idea that, in other words, there's this one extreme, the other extreme, we're a higher middle way. I think it's an example of a larger phenomenon that a thoughtful Ovid Hashem should be sensitive to, which is that Western thinking often presents us with certain dichotomies, that there's this or that, and Avdei Hashem can make the mistake of sort of buying into that structure and assuming that, well, there are two options and we have to figure out whether the Torah way is X or Y, as opposed to starting from the Torah and figuring out what we believe, which often will be neither X nor Y. That's true in a practical sense in the abortion debate. The Western society thinks of it as either one extreme or the other extreme, either no holds barred, or else it's a form of murder, right? Because that's the secular approach and the Christian approach, respectively. But the halacha clearly says it's not something that I can do at will. It's not a matter of convenience. But it doesn't necessarily mean that it's a murder either. As a matter of fact, machlok is rishonim. Do you see Rambam or other rishonim? Do you see abortion as a milder form of ritzicha, or it's not ritzicha at all? It's a different type of iser, and it can be practical nafka means in terms of when would abortion be appropriate and when not. But now this is not the time to have a sir, the shir on abortion. But I raise that as an example of we often make the mistake of just assuming the dichotomies, the two options that Western thought has, as opposed to starting from within. What does our Torah say? Right? Or we think about science. So Western thought typically thinks of faith and reason as opposites. Maybe it goes back to when the church persecuted Galileo. So Western thought sees it's either science or the church. You either accept religion or you accept science. And you have to choose your side. But we should not be fooled into accepting that that's the environment, that those are the options. We have to figure out where we lie. No, we're going to start from the Torah and notice that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's approach to belief, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's approach to science, he after all is the one who created all of it, we don't have to buy in to a false Western dichotomy. And that's true here as well. That Western thought often presents us with this dichotomy about physicality. Either you have the what's presented as the religious approach or the non-religious approach. Really, it's the Christian approach and the non-religious approach. The Christian approach to physicality is fundamentally bad, and physicality is something we should feel guilty about. Or the non-religious, the secular approach, that just do whatever you please. No holds barred. But, and often, as Jews, we try to figure out, well, where do we lie? We figure, well, we probably are more the religious approach than the secular approach. But that's a false dichotomy. That's a false pair of choices. We reject both of them. Kadosh Baruch Hu is Yotzer Or V'Ari Choshech. The Choshech isn't there on its own, nor is the Choshech an enemy of the Or. We have to, in fact, Kadosh Baruch Hu created all of it. Kadosh Baruch Hu created the physical. Kadosh Baruch Hu created the spiritual. And as the Rambam points out, in that single whole parak Gimel, such a, as I said before, it's arguably the most frequently relevant siman in all of Shulchan Aruch. It has to do with how we live the vast majority of our lives. And it has to do with the impact of hashkafa and thought and focus on transforming the meaningfulness of our lives. We reject the notion that physicality is bad. We also reject the notion that physicality is just do whatever you want. And I think this sort of, as we opened, the Tainus is a day of tshuva. Asar B'Tavis in particular is a day to rethink the Shem Elohim Hizkir of Heavon Garein, to rethink the extent to which, in subtle ways, sometimes foreign thinking penetrates into the way we think about life. And Asar B'Tavis, and particularly maybe the way things work out this year, Asar B'Tavis is a good opportunity to confront and reject the Ahura Mazda and the Hariman. To confront and reject the Hurmiz and the Hurmin, the way Amemar confronts and rejects the Sanhedrin Lama test, and to strengthen our awareness that that we have so much work to do and so much opportunity in terms of being Mekadesh in our entire lives through a proper approach to the physical aspects of our lives. Abosa, thank you so much. I'm glad to stick around for questions. Kvod HaRav, thank you for joining us. It was a kavod to have you.